Let's welcome another episode of Bulletproof. And we have some amazing guests today. First of all, I want to thank all the listeners for making us a top five podcast. And it's not because of myself or my voice, it's because I have amazing guests like these two today. And we're going to have a great time. And I'm excited to speak to both of them. We have Veronica LaRue and Patrick Kruiser. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Good. How are you?
Thanks for coming on today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, like I said, I just want to touch a little so for the listeners get a little acquainted. So, Veronica, you were a detective, right? Or for 14 years with the Gilbert Police Department.
Correct.
And Patrick, you were a Marine, or right? Were you a Marine or?
Yes, sir. Yep, Marine Corps.
Yeah. Thank you for your services. And then you became a police officer.
Yes, sir.
And where were you in the same precinct as Veronica?
No, I was in a much better city. I was in
Okay,
Mesa, which is the second largest city in Arizona.
so cool. So again, so how many you did 14, Veronica? How many years did you do, Patrick?
Just under 17.
17. Okay. And now how come you did 14, Veronica?
So I went out medically as a result of PTSD and acute stress and stuff.
Okay. And Patrick, you had mentioned 17 years. Did something happen with you
Yep.
or?
Yeah, same thing. I had nine infant deaths that pretty much caused me to have to step away from the job.
And how did you guys connect?
Through this type of service, we had a peer group that we were invited to, and we just started clicking and trying to figure out ways that we could make peer groups better for first responders that are struggling. And Veronica had a great idea to start a nonprofit, so that's where we're at.
That's amazing because my last year in the NYPD was 9/11. I was there the first night, and again it was mayhem because first of all nobody was fucking ready for that. A, B, it was still a rescue. We were in the pit. Nobody had construction hats. Nobody had masks on. It was nuts, right? So luckily, I was only there that night. And thank God, because more people died afterwards from cancer and all the all this ventilation and stuff. And a lot of people had gotten off the job with PTSD after witnessing that, because again, it's not something even as a police officer, we're really trained, or we were ready or not ready for something like that to happen. It was mayhem. So just give us a little background on, if I say it's me, I reach out to you guys, what is it that, what is the process? I say, hey, Veronica, hey, Patrick, I'm fucked up. I'm doing this job for so many years. I need help. What does that look like for me?
So I would say, depending on where you are, we right now are connected in over 42 states with a mental health
Wow.
resources. And so depending on where you're coming from, we would have you reach out to them or reach out to them for you to get you connected with that. We have an in-person and virtual weekly peer support group. And so we would invite you to that. And then essentially it's just keeping in contact with you, helping you get through the process, letting you know you're not alone, just being your resource and your support till you are back on your own feet on your own.
Now, have you noticed, again, I was only a cop for 7 years myself. I got injured, nothing crazy. I hurt my knees. I got out three quarters. But do you find a pattern with police officers or again, military or what have you, that they experience in a sense that type of experience, usually brings them kind of to you? Is it kind of individualized, or is it something that like a homicide detective that deals with all this shit? I mean, how does that work, or how does that look? Is it more just all over the map, or is it more individualized?
I would say, for the most part, most of the people that we that have reached out to us and that are a part of our groups have cumulative stress from the job. And so, however, it doesn't mean that it can't be a one specific incident that kind of cracks the box open for you. But I think that's kind of how it would be. And unfortunately, I think most people still don't reach out until they have hit rock bottom and there's nowhere else to go. It's now or never kind of thing. And so we do have a lot of younger officers who are a little more open to the idea of preventing PTSD and things. So they're a little more willing to take on practices early on to kind of build that resilience. But there's still a big gap in that the veteran officers who really are just resistant to the idea, mostly stigma, right? Like nobody wants to come out and say that there's a problem, especially when you're a cop. We fix problems, we don't have problems. So it's really hard still to for them to reach out to us until literally they're just desperate. There's not they don't know what else to do.
Now,
I would
are there a
add
lot of these?
the
Yeah, I'm
calls.
sorry. Bye, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say I would add the types of calls that usually break most officers, and I mean that in a gentle way, is usually the kid calls. I mean, everybody can see, the gruesome stuff, and we're able to compartmentalize that pretty well. But when it comes to innocent kids that nobody's looking out for, or you have these, extreme calls, that's usually what breaks people.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, do a lot of the officers that reach out to you, are they active still, or are they retired, or is it a mixture?
It's a mixture.
It is a mixture.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm just gonna go back to myself because that's the only way I could do it, right? So, like when we had guys in the NYPD that had a drinking problem, right? They would basically get their guns taken away. And they would be sent to what we call the farm, which would be, like a place to help, rehab or what have you. Again, probably a small percentage of guys ever got to the point where they admitted it
Right.
or proceeded with it because they, again, cops are ball breakers, right? It's part of it, right? A crime scene, right? What's the first thing we all do? If somebody blows their head off, right? Yeah, we all, making jokes only because I think that's a defense mechanism, right? Because it's not normal to be sitting in a room with his brains all over the place. So what do? We all kind of kid. But what I did notice again, so I thank God I was lucky, right? I was a cop when I was a cop, right? And when the tour ended, my uniform was off. I didn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean, the tour is over, whatever I saw, whatever I did, that was it. And then there was guys that, after work, they went to the bar, like that we used to call 4 to 12s, 4 to 4s, right? And then, they'd be drinking, they'd be harping on shit. And again, that's where you could see the problem happening. And again, that was more so than not. You know what I mean? Because I remember going into roll call, and again, because I was a different guy, I would say to myself, man, if I wasn't cops with these guys, there's not too many guys I would hang out with because, I wasn't a cop cop. I was a cop, but I wasn't, if that makes sense. So getting back to what you guys do, right? Is there a certain time where people or other cops drop? Again, I'm just talking like a cop, drop a dime, and I'm gonna date myself on other people that maybe you guys should reach out to.
Yes. So
So
they'll
how
give
does
us
that?
a heads up and saying, "Hey, I have a buddy who's starting to struggle. I can tell that he's not himself anymore, whether he's treating his family differently, he's treating his squad mates differently, he's just secluding himself away from other people." And then we'll do like kind of like a warm handoff and say, "Hey, just let your buddy know that I'm going to give him a call." So that way it's not a shock to the system and we're able to approach it in a much lighter way versus just, "Hey, I heard you're fucked up. How can I help you?"
Right. And I mean, how do they, when you're calling them cold, right? How is that, how do they, respond to that? When they have no idea you're going to call and you're like, hey, this is Patrick. I heard you're not doing well. Are they like, What? Get the fuck out of here. Or are they kind of receptive?
I think it probably goes either way. I can say from my own experience, when I was going through it, I actually got it. A friend of mine sent me a text message out of the blue, and he was like, "Hey, I heard you're going through it, and what do you need? Let me help you. Let me get you set up with these services." And I was like, I was super thankful because at the time I didn't know what was happening to me. I don't think even then I believed in what could happen and what was going on. I thought it was, I don't know, I just couldn't figure out like why I couldn't control anything that was happening physiologically with me. And so when he reached out at that point, I was just ready for any help to get back to me so I could stay on the job, so I could take care of my kids, all the things. So I was happy for their handout because I'd been working on a squad and none of them at the time said anything to me. They didn't point it out. They didn't ask about it, but clearly everybody knew I was going through it. And so it took somebody who had already retired previously from the same situation. So he understood what I was going through. And I think that makes a huge difference. If you go to someone who doesn't get it, doesn't understand it, and hasn't felt it, they have a very hard time accepting that it's a real thing. And I was the same person. I was the asshole that when people were going out before me that didn't believe it was real, it was an excuse to get an early retirement. And so when it happened to me, it was like, it was a big, what's the word? It was just, it made me the asshole for not supporting people before me. And it just really helped me to understand what was out there. And so I think that's part of really why we do what we do now is because we understand that what it is going through it alone. Back in my day, there were no services, there was no support, there was nobody to walk you through it. It was just, you were screwed. The departments were against you, everybody was. And
Yeah.
so we just want to make sure that people going through it now, have that support that we didn't.
That's awesome. And again, for people that are just joining us now, we're talking to Veronica LaRue and Patrick Cruiser, who was retired from the job and they started the Afterwatch program. And we're talking about cops and military, I guess, Patrick, too, right? We have PTSD. If you don't mind, and again, not to get personal, obviously, in my experience, when somebody starts something like this, right, it's because they've had for, and you just had mentioned, you just sort of touched on that, Veronica, a little bit. They usually went through something themselves. Like usually, if somebody starts a cancer or something, Duchenne for kids, whatever, it's usually because their son or their what, they're going through it personally. So, what was your guys, and again, you could say, I'm not comfortable talking about that. What was your breaking point? Or if not your breaking point, what overall do you think caused it? Or was it just over time? Was there something specific or was it over time that got you to this point?
So for me, my harder incident, I'll say, is I had 3 infant deaths in 4 days. And the last one was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I love the department that I worked for, but they made some very big mistakes. And I'll say they sent me home right after the incident, and I was under the impression that I did something wrong. And for that whole week, I felt guilt and resentment to the department because nobody was reaching out to me and all that other stuff. And I felt as if I did something wrong, and I didn't. So for a week, they just sent me home. They're like, "Hey, nobody's reaching out. Nobody's explaining anything to me." The last thing I said to the sergeant that sent me home was like, "Do I need to call my attorney? Because you're just telling me I need to leave. Like, this isn't normal for me."
What I mean again, what was that for though, Patrick? I mean,
So,
were they doing it? Were they doing it to like just say, listen, take a break, go get, have some time to yourself, or was it just like discarding you and like, what? So were you taking it differently than what it was, or?
so essentially what happened was I had a 29-day-old baby die in my arms. And then as soon as the baby was rushed to the hospital, that's when the sergeant was like, "Hey, go home." And that's when I was like, do I need to call my attorney? Like feeling like I killed this baby. When after the fact, I found out what actually really happened, that it was the parents that did something to the kid, and it transpired into, me holding the baby in my arms. So for that week, I was under the impression that I had killed this baby, and then finally the truth came out. But the reason they sent me home was, like I said, that was my third infant death in 4 days. So that was my Friday of that week. And they were like, hey, you've just seen too much. But if they would have explained that way and touched on it that way, I would have felt differently about it. But obviously, just go home and you're like, well, what the fuck does that mean? So that's kind of
Right.
what
And
happened.
again, what people don't realize, Patrick, and you saw even more. I don't know if you saw active duty, but it always blows my mind. No pun intended. It always blows my mind how, like I said, if you're in war, right, and you have this camaraderie, you're fighting for your life every day, and you have this brotherhood, right? And then you get sent home, and now you're just a regular dude, right? Your wife's like, hey, go to the bagel store, get me a coffee. It's hard to even, and again, comparing it to what you just went through, you just had three babies die, right, in your arms, which is not a normal thing for somebody to deal with, right? Now it's like, hey, go home and catch a Yankee game. You know what I mean? And it's crazy that there's not something put in place immediately for you to either speak to somebody and again, cops have that mentality. They're afraid to show the vulnerable side, right? Because we're supposed to be these superheroes, which again, we're totally not. And I found out as I got older, right? So when you're a cop, I got a cop, I was 20, right? So you, again, you have a gun, you think you're Superman, you'll do all these different things. When you're 40, you're like, maybe I won't do this. You know what I mean? So the point is, I totally get it. And again, I don't know if every department, has the same protocol as others, but yes, again, having something like that happen, I could absolutely see that getting to somebody. You know what I mean? And I've had that happen to me once. But not in my arms. We raced in the R&P and we got to the hospital, and it was a SIDS case. If you remember SIDS, since for everybody out there, it's sudden infant death syndrome. But there's nothing more devastating than that. And yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, I'm sorry that happened to you, but at least that was your calling in some weird way to do this. Right. So because of that happening to you, and I'm not trying to sound like Tony Robbins or whatever, but we all go down a road, right? And because something this happened, you what this happened. So maybe that was God's way. And it's terrible that the three children had to die for you to be here. But that's probably why we're speaking right now, which is ironic in a sense.
Well, we agree with that. We talk about that all the time. And that's where the Afterwatch Foundation steps in, because we're able to offer resources right away, get people connected outside of like the employee assistance program. So that way they're able to talk to somebody anonymously and not have to worry about the job finding out or trying to creep in and try to get information. So we offer those services right away, especially if we hear something, in the local agencies that just occurred, we're able to contact them and make things happen.
Gotcha. And then, Veronica, if you don't mind, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of why you kind of came into this, that would be amazing.
So mine was a little different. I mean, I had child deaths, obviously. I worked robbery, homicide, and I was a first responder on a lot of child deaths myself. And we had a mass homicide in my small town of Gilbert, Arizona, back in 2012. And in that, subject killed his girlfriend's whole family, including a 15-month-old baby. And I was one of the first on scene. And after we, obviously made sure the scene was secure and stuff, we attended to the victims. And me being a mom, and the only female on duty that day, I obviously naturally was expected to attend to the baby. And so that's what I did. And she'd been shot in the head. And so, obviously it was traumatic for everybody there. However, I think I kind of pushed through it, did what we normally do, and just kind of put it away. And then a few years later, because of that, several officers went out on medicals. And so my department actually implemented a new policy that said we had to now, after every critical incident, go see a psychologist that was contracted through them. So I responded to an officer-involved shooting in 2015. And when I went to see the psychologist the next day, she was aware of the 2012 incident and of my involvement in that. And so, although I was fine from the officer-involved shooting, she actually started performing EMDR, which is something I was not aware of, had no knowledge about, related to the 2012 incident that I had, long put away. So it's not to say that it wouldn't have come back to get me at some point. She just kind of opened that box for me right then. And so really just turned my life upside down. And I went through things I had, like I said, I didn't even believe were possible or were real.
Wow. Well, I guess, I mean, again, it's crazy, right? Because, I think, and thank God, again, just going back and forth, having a conversation with myself. Again, I only did 7 years anyway, but again, 7 years in the NYPD is like
Is a lot.
25 in a place a lot smaller. If someone's, my kids always ask me about stuff, and a lot of stuff, for some reason, I blocked out. I don't, unless somebody brings it up to me, I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I remember that. But I had a situation where we had an EDP, and obviously, we go in there with lights and sirens, and we show up, and we're talking about lunch, like, because 95% of the shit is unfounded, right? So we go there, the woman comes, the mother comes out, he's got a knife, he's crazy. So we turn the corner and we have our guns out, and there's a guy, he's about 5'2", right? And he has a knife, and we're like, drop the knife. He takes his tongue out, cuts it off, and he throws it at us. So we're like, Central, have ESU respond for it with. So ESU comes. Now, this was a little guy, and I'm a pretty big guy. I was much bigger back then, and my partner was even bigger than me. And ESU comes, like, get out of the way. We're gonna tase him. So they tase him. He goes like this, and he takes him out. Now he's fucking, we're wrestling with this guy, four of us, right? So we're slipping on blood. Finally we get him cuffed, right? And again, he's not a prisoner. He's EDP, right? Emotionally disturbed person. So by that point, we had called a 1013, which makes, everybody in the command comes, right? So it just happened to be, and there's a reason why I'm telling you this story. The way we walked out, right, was the two ESU guys, and we all looked like we fought the Rock, right? So they were all waiting to see what this guy looked like, right? And the guy was fucking 5'2", and all of a sudden everybody's breaking our balls. Get the fuck out, you fuck! But you know what? The guy was on PCP, and you know what? That fucked me up for a while. I mean, we even saved the tongue. We put the tongue on ice, and hey, we just fucking picked it up. We threw it on a, we've got ice in a, but that stuck with me for a while, because I still to this day have dreams about that. Believe it or not, of all the things I've ever dealt with, and I've seen, again, SIDS babies. I've seen people hanging. I've seen homicides, suicides, floaters. But for that reason, that particular thing is my go-to when, which fucks me up. Just the whole idea of him taking his tongue out and throwing it. So like I said, with that, I'm sure we all, as cops, have had one of those incidents that stick with them. And then again, I commend for what you guys are doing, because some guys have, or women, not guys, I'm using, in general, have tough times coping. You know what I mean? So again, the Afterwatch Foundation, I believe, is an amazing idea. And again, I commend you guys. And first of all, I commend you guys for not only starting it, but having issues and openly sharing, what got you to the point where, you needed somebody. So what I'd like you to do again is, I know we touched on it really early, but how do people get in touch with you that are listening? Because we do have a lot of cops, people that, again, well, I'm gonna say we have a lot of people that are more into true crime and stuff than are civilians, but we do have cops, we do have firemen, we do have, people that, you guys could potentially help that are listening when this comes out. So how, again, is there a social media site? Is there how do we find either of you together? How does somebody find you if they're on social media and they want to reach out?
Sure. So you can go to our website. We're at afterwatchfoundation.com. We are on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and LinkedIn under Afterwatch Foundation as well. From there, if anyone wants to reach out to us personally, you'll see us. We tag ourselves on everything throughout the social media, but they can definitely start with the website. It'll give links to our emails, our phone number. We do have a 24-hour crisis line. Coming and be starting an app, which is also for peer support, but then also we're going to be affiliating with another app, which is an actual 24-hour crisis, like immediate emergency crisis type situation. So we've got a lot of great things coming up for people, for first responders.
And we also do that peer support group on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
So if there are individuals that are struggling and out of state, we can do Zoom so they can join us, because we have some members in our Chicago area that join us because they're starting a peer support group up there. So they can join us for, that hour of conversation, and we run it very chill. There's a quick topic that we talk about. And we don't sit around the table just saying like, hey, let me hear your story so I can one up your story. And
So it's not like an AA meeting, or it's not
No,
like one of them.
it's literally meant to bring up the conversation. Hopefully the conversation stays on that topic, and wherever the conversation goes, it goes. So that way we can work with you where you're at, not try to re-traumatize you with the topics.
Awesome. And then the last time I asked you guys, and again, because every good deed also has haters, right? So have you guys ever gotten blowback on this? Like, oh, this is bull. I don't want to say bull, but I'm just saying, whatever you do good in life, right? There's always somebody, especially with social media. That's the greatest thing about social media, and the worst thing, because people have access that shouldn't, that just blurt shit out. So is there any t situation where you have people that are just cop haters, or people that, have put this
I
down,
wouldn't
or
say so. No, I think most people respect what we're doing, because we're doing it for the people that serve the community,
that's
and
amazing.
we're not doing it for money. We're not doing it for anything like
No,
that.
that's
This
great.
is a nonprofit that's just literally working to help the people. If anything, the only hate I would say that we get are other organizations that are trying to do the same thing and aren't meeting at the same level that we're at. We'll get pissed about that, but we're not
So
here
stupid.
to take
How
things away
stupid.
from anything. I'd rather partner with you to make things better versus like try to take away clientele or anything like that.
Amazing. Amazing. So listen, guys, I'd like to thank you guys so much for coming on. And again, this was totally not what I expected to be doing today, because I had a whole bio on Veronica, but I'm glad we got to do this, because this is something that, again, most people that are civilians don't realize, right? And people that are retired or active, might listen to and say, you know what? I'm not feeling like myself. So if we reach one of our 30,000 subscribers or download people, and we get one person, we really, we